Welcome to episode 434 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. And we are here after the holidays. We had a little bit of a break, and then we're probably going to have another bit of an odd schedule with CES coming up. Man, it's that time of year.
It is. But Happy New Year, Richard.
Happy New Year, Josh.
And Happy New Year to all of our listeners. Yeah, so it was a nice week off. It was a nice, relaxing week off for me. I hope it was a relaxing week for you, was it?
It was not a relaxing week. I had a very, very busy work week. So I'm
glad. You worked.
Yeah. Didn't.
Whoops. Yeah. No. Today was my first day back since the 22nd. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
No, not the 22nd. Maybe the 22nd. Yeah. Yeah, it was nice. Cool.
Very good.
So now that I've depressed you even more, why don't we just get into our feedback? I would say listener feedback, and I guess it sort of is, but this is a special piece of feedback that you received via email. Our email address is entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
I had feedback from the developer of My Media for, my favorite Amazon digital assistant, whose name I won't say. We talked about this product a couple weeks ago, and I had some comments when we talked about it about how it would not play individual songs. And so Ed got in touch and said, yeah, as a matter of fact, we had some problems implementing that initially, but as of the latest version, you can now request, you can say, ask My Media to play the song whatever, or ask My Media to play the song and then name the song by name of the artist. I guess the vernacular there is requiring you to say play the song, and that's how it's differentiating a song from an album or an artist or something like that. So it is possible now, and it's great to see that that's in there. The other thing that I had asked him, because I reached out to him when I was writing my post about this, was where things stood with iHome Server and whether they intended to continue supporting and developing iHome Server. And he responded by saying, we are still supporting iHome Server, and we're considering bringing Amazon's voice control to it, as many users are actually keen on remote controlling iTunes rather than streaming iTunes to their Echo devices. So watch for that. So that's pretty cool to hear.
That's really cool to hear.
And that was it for feedback. We didn't have any listener feedback, but again, I'll reiterate, you can get in touch with us through our email address at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
All right, so let's move on to our featured story of the week. And this was kind of a surprise end-of-the-year app release on the Xbox One, and it's Kodi. Kodi has finally arrived on the Xbox One. It's been available for Windows 10 PCs as a Windows Store app, a UWP, for a while now. And now they've been able to port it successfully over to the Xbox One. Now, it's an alpha, and they absolutely want to make sure that you know that it's an alpha. In fact, when you download it and install it on your Xbox One, and you go into My Games and Apps, it says Kodi, version 16.0-alpha-1. That's the title. It doesn't just say Kodi. They are really making it clear that it's an alpha. And it definitely is. They've got the basics there. But in terms of file support, or really I should say file location support, that is one of the biggest areas where it is definitely still an alpha. You can't access local storage, which you probably wouldn't have much on your Xbox anyway. You probably don't have an external hard drive plugged into your Xbox One that you're using for media storage. And it doesn't support SMB file shares, which is the normal like Windows way of doing file shares, where you just do backslash backslash and the computer name and all that. Nope, it pretty much only supports NFS file shares, network file shares. So I went to try this out because I thought, hey, I've got a Synology NAS. This shouldn't be hard. I've already got a few folders set up there that I'm using with my Plex server. Yeah, it turns out I didn't really know everything that there is to know about NFS, and I wasn't able to get NFS working properly on my Synology in time to get this all working with Kodi. I was able to check out some other things, though. So Kodi is known for having lots and lots and lots of add-ins and also lots of customization. But TV is one of the things that Kodi does, and they have lots of back-end options, you know, add-in options for TV. And one of them is, of course, for the HD Home Run tuners, which is what I use at home. So I installed a little add-on for the HD Home Run, and it just worked immediately. I didn't have to go through a channel scan because it just pulls all that information from the HD Home Run. I imagine if you were using different backends, you probably would. But with HD Home Run, you don't have to. I immediately had a full grid guide like we're used to seeing. And nice. It just worked. It worked really well, actually. It didn't give me DVR controls, and I was poking around in the settings and couldn't quite figure that out, but I haven't tried to do a Kodi PVR setup in a really, really, really long time. So I'll have to spend a little bit more time trying to figure that out maybe for our show in a couple of weeks' time, but it's working there. Like there are millions, it seems, of add-ons for Kodi. And so I tried a couple. I went through and I found one for CNN. It didn't work. I tried one for NHL, and it was able to play like the featured videos from the NHL channel. And they're basically the same videos that you'd be able to see if you installed the NHL app on the Xbox One. So this isn't really necessarily the most useful add-on, but I knew it was one that I could at least try. So I know that there are some add-ins that work, some that won't. I don't really know why they don't. When it doesn't work, it gives you an error message and says, check the log file. I don't think I'm going to be able to do that on my Xbox. So, yeah. Another really big downer here. I did all this initially with my Xbox One controller, of course, and then I thought, what am I doing? Why don't I grab my remote control, my Harmony? This is how I would actually use this. It didn't work. I don't really understand how that's the case, but I couldn't use the arrow keys on my IR remote to control the Kodi app. So I imagine that's something that they'll fix relatively soon, because that's a pretty big deal. That's a really big deal for an app like this. But so there's definitely a lot of good things here. If you're a Kodi fan, there's no reason not to check this out. It's a free app, so go ahead and grab that. But it's going to require some setup, because you know I'm not your typical Kodi user. I'm pretty much all Plex. So it's been a while since I've poked around with Kodi. I had forgotten that there's not really a Kodi backend server sort of thing like you set up with a Plex server. Like with Plex, you set up Plex servers, and then you have Plex clients that connect to that backend server. So with Plex, you set up all of your file locations for your movies and TV shows and music and all that stuff once, and then whenever you log into your client apps, it all shows up. There's no logging in with Kodi, which is nice because, you know, logging in from a game console is never, ever fun.
Right.
But having to set up all of your video and TV folders and all that stuff on every client, that's not very fun either. So I guess you pick which thing you don't like to do and go with the other option. So we'll keep an eye on Kodi and how that support comes along, but it's definitely worth checking out if you're a Kodi user or if you just want to try something other than Plex or MB or something like that on your Xbox One.
You know, something that we're kind of just glossing over here is the significance of this coming to Xbox, right? Kodi is the old XBMC, the right. Xbox Media Center splinter or fork, if you will. And now with a development platform where third-party developers can create apps to run on Xbox, that there's a Kodi app on the Xbox One itself is kind of amusing and kind of cool.
Right. It is. It's very cool.
All right. Well, let us go into video. And speaking of Xbox, one of the things that caught my attention actually this morning in my Twitter feed were some posts from Matt Paprocki of Dublu.com. Now, if you remember that
and
name.
Formerly.
Yeah.
Formerly of the Scene in HD podcast right here. Used to be hosted right here at the DMZ while that podcast was still around. They produced a ton of episodes.
They did. But, they did. And he on Dublu.com writes really good, really comprehensive reviews of Blu-ray media as it becomes available. And of course, with the now edition of Ultra HD Blu-ray, that's really where he's been focusing his attention. And I've bought a number of discs as a result of reading some of his UHD reviews recently. He has reviewed a number of titles where he thought that the black levels on those titles were kind of muddy, and he's using an Xbox One S as his video playback device. So he went out and bought himself a cheap $80 Magnavox standalone player and suddenly found that all of his HDR problems that he was having with black levels went away. So he's concerned that there are some pretty significant problems with HDR on the Xbox One S. He mentions that just a Google search will end up bringing up all kinds of issues that people have reported. And he's concerned about it enough that he's actually planning on revisiting some of his previous reviews that he wrote to correct them. Because it turns out that a couple of movies aren't bad at all. He thought that they had problems with black levels, and it wasn't the movie. It was the Xbox.
Yeah, so that is a real downer. I haven't tried to play an Ultra HD Blu-ray or a Blu-ray of any kind in my Xbox for a long time until about last week. I got Jen the latest, Harry Potter and the Fantastic Beast or whatever the heck it is. whatever that latest Harry Potter-ish movie is. I got her that on Ultra HD Blu-ray for Christmas. So I popped that in, was once again blown away by how wonderful Ultra HD Blu-ray looks, but didn't really watch it for more than a couple of minutes, partly because I don't care about the movie and partly because I didn't have time. But it looked okay for those few minutes. But so this is all really, really unfortunate, but there is an upside to all of this. Microsoft actually updates the software on the Xbox One quite regularly.
Yep.
Like it's not uncommon for us to get like monthly updates to the Xbox. So I'm sure that this is something that they know about and that they're working on. I mean, I've seen HDR issues posted like with the Netflix app and stuff like that in the past. So I'm sure that this is another one that they're working on. Matt did say when I asked him on Twitter that he's in the Insider program. But it's probably not just with Insider preview builds. But that does mean that when they do release updates to this, he'll be one of the first people to get those updates and can test this stuff again. So we will try to keep an eye on our friend Matt Paprocki over at Dublu to see if there are any updates, hopefully positive updates to the HDR situation on the Xbox One S.
Yeah, for sure. Now, we have a lot of other HDR news, so we'll kind of lump that together here.
Right. So this isn't brand new, but it is something that happened in the last few weeks that I wanted to bring to everybody's attention. HDR is something that we've primarily talked about in terms of watching on a TV in your living room. But why not be able to experience that on a computer too? It is technically possible. Well, you would need a monitor or a TV that, of course, supports HDR. And I think that TVs is probably how a lot of people are trying to do it now. But what if you don't want a TV? Because they don't make small TVs that are 4K or HDR or anything like that. So maybe you want a 24 or 27 inch monitor that supports HDR. Well, Visa, who likes to create lots of standards for displays and things like that, they're the ones that made the mounting standards that go on the back of your TVs and monitors and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's VESA, not Visa, the card that's in your pocket.
Right, not your credit card. No. They've come up with a standard for HDR specifically for computer monitors, and they're calling this Display HDR No Space. And they've set up three different standards levels. And the idea here is give some easy nomenclature for people to be able to look at a box in a store and actually be fairly confident that it really is an HDR display and how good of an HDR display it actually is. So the three levels are Display HDR 400, 600, and 1000. And if you're an HDR nerd, you probably already have a pretty good idea of what those numbers are. That's the nits. That is how bright that thing can get. And you may be thinking 400's the base. 400 isn't very bright. Well, turns out it's about twice as bright as most laptop LCDs currently get. So that is pretty bright, relatively speaking, I guess. And the other thing, of course, though, is HDR isn't just about brightness. It's also about having a wider color gamut. I don't really want to use the phrase wide color gamut because this doesn't necessarily actually specify what we would typically mean when we use the phrase wide color gamut, because wide color gamut usually means 10-bit or higher color levels. And with Display HDR 400, it still only actually requires the display to support 8-bit color depth. And I'm sure there's a lot of people hearing that and yelling, like, seriously, Visa? Seriously? That's not actually HDR. But their reasoning for it is most LCDs that you would buy currently say that they're 8-bit, and they're not. They're only 6-bit, and they're doing other trickery to try and make it look better. So with this standard, they're saying, no, you do actually have to legitimately be 8-bit color and be able to hit 400 peak nits on the brightness scale to qualify for Display HDR 400. Now, 600 and 1000, those levels do require the display to be to offer 10-bit color. So there you go. I mean, it's still not quite as high as some of the really high-end TVs that you could buy right now, but it's better. And then it does kind of start to get a little bit vague in terms of what it actually needs to support with the color gamut. You know, you start talking about percentages of those color gamut specs and all that stuff. Well, for 600, the spec just says it has to be a visible increase in color gamut over the Display HDR 400 monitors. And for the Display HDR 1000, it has to be a significant visible increase in color gamut. So that's not the most objective measurements, but it but it should get you at least you're going to have a better idea of what you're buying. So is it the be-all, end-all of consumer standards? No, but it's way better than what we had.
So what does this mean in terms of what consumers are looking for? Like, is this one more thing that I need to worry about a source supporting? Or is this really just about display specs? And as a consumer, I don't really have to worry about it except to suggest that maybe a higher number is a better thing to consider if I'm buying a new display.
This is only for the display specs. This doesn't really take into consideration at all what your computer is doing. It's just saying that if your computer can output this stuff, this display will handle it and render it properly. You will see that brightness. You will see those increased or more colors visible by this these displays.
So then do we still end up with a situation where we need to know if certain displays are capable of showing HDR10 versus Dolby Vision and anything else that might come down the road?
Yeah, that unfortunately is still going to matter. And these standards don't really appear to enforce those types of requirements. They do say it has to support HDR10, and that makes sense. That is basically the global standard,
right?
Baseline standard for HDR display formats. But this doesn't actually specify that a display would need to require, say, Dolby Vision at a certain level or anything like that.
Hmm. Okay. All right. When do you think that we're going to see this actually baked into displays? Is there any sort of timeline on this?
I would imagine that next week, while you and I are prowling around the CES floor, that we're going to see a bunch of monitors that have this.
Funny about that.
Yeah, that would be my guess.
All right.
So then the next question, of course, becomes, all right, so I bought an HDR monitor for my PC. What can I watch in HDR? Well, Netflix. Netflix now streams HDR video only on Windows 10. But there's a lot of hardware requirements here. This doesn't just require an HDR monitor or a TV like that hooked up to your computer. You probably remember a few weeks ago we talked about HDR home theater PCs and what it would require to have an Ultra HD Blu-ray player in your computer. And we talked about how you need a seventh generation Intel processor. You need to use the built-in Intel graphics. Basically, all of those things that we said about Ultra HD Blu-ray, yeah, that's really the requirements here for Netflix also. Except with Netflix, because it's a streaming service, you also have to use either the Windows 10 version of the Netflix app or Microsoft Edge. You can't use Chrome. You can't use Firefox. None of those browsers support this. If you want to watch it in a browser, you've got to use Edge.
Yeah. I have to wonder how useful this is ultimately. And that was kind of my comment in our notes. The specs are really high end. I think this would have been awesome on a home theater PC, but I question how many people are really still building home theater PCs these days. It's nice to see, it's nice that it's available. I want to clarify something. You said that Netflix is now streaming HDR only on Windows 10. I think as far as desktop and computers go, it is right. Only on Windows 10. Of course, Netflix does stream HDR on other platforms now.
Right, like Xbox and TVs and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So I think this is useful as people start to get HDR monitors. I mean, people watch a lot of video content at their desktop computer. People watch a lot of Netflix at desktop computers. So if you have HDR monitors or a big TV that you're using as a monitor, because I do know people who have just went out and bought 42-inch 4K TVs to use as their computer monitors.
Sure.
So here now you can finally watch Netflix on your PC and maybe in a window or something like that. In HDR on your PC. So that's a really nice thing to have. And I think that sort of thing is going to become more common as laptops start to support HDR and things like that.
And so that's really my question is, what is the use case for this? Is this a full screen viewing scenario, or is this something like, I wonder, can this even work in a window? I know when I'm sending HDR content to my TV, it registers that it's now in an HDR mode. So is it possible to just show HDR content in a window while you're doing something else on your screen and that's not HDR? Like, I don't even understand how that works.
I don't know. That's a really great question. That's a really great question. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that might be a good question for us to ask one of those vendors selling one of these monitors sometime next week.
Yeah, maybe next week. Right. All right, one more real quick one here while we're still in video news. We talk a lot about Plex and frequently a lot about Plex and their live TV functionality. And we've been talking a lot about what platforms support it because that list is pretty slim. It's Android, Android TV, iOS, and the web browser. And that's been it for a while. And we've been trying to, you know, Richard and I have been basically taking bets as to what would be next. Would it be game consoles? Would it be Roku? Would it be Apple TV? It's Roku, which I think is what I said, which I think I predicted that Roku would be next. So Roku now does officially support live TV. As I'm sitting here talking about this, about ready to say, I haven't tried this. It's because I always forget that I own a Roku device. I have one of those little Roku streaming sticks that I got for subscribing to Sling TV for 3 months to watch NHL hockey, but I never used it. I hooked it up once just to check it out, and I unhooked it and tossed it in a drawer. So maybe I should pull it out and give this a try, but I imagine that it looks a whole lot like it does on Android TV.
Yeah, this is a good move on their part. I mean, really, as far as streaming devices go, Roku is the company that has the numbers right now, and getting out on all of those devices, as well as all of the TVs that are starting, well, not starting, but continuing to come out with Roku built in on board, this is a smart move.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, cool. So that is it for video news. We have a couple audio stories. Both of these are kind of bad news, unfortunately. The first one, and we forgot to mention this in our last episode, and I'll take the blame for that one, but over the holiday, Groove Music switched to a listen to your own audio library only solution, and no longer has the ability to stream from the Music Pass library that Microsoft previously had available, and no longer allows you to download songs or purchase music. So this is a change that we talked about in the past. It basically switched over at the end of the year, and you had up until the 31st. We tweeted something out, hoped that folks noticed that, or on their own went to Groove Music to download anything that they had purchased so that they could get the MP3 files and play them on whatever device they want to use them. But that is a big change for Groove Music. And as a reminder, they are encouraging people to use Spotify instead as their on-demand music service on Microsoft devices.
Yeah. You know, like you said, I wish that we would have remembered to say this on the last episode, but you know, we did talk about this when it was initial news, and hopefully you didn't procrastinate on any music that you might have purchased. But yeah, it's kind of sad to see Zune Music kind of die as it got rebranded to Xbox Music, and then it kind of died as it got rebranded to Groove Music, and now it's just dead, at least as a service. It's just an app now. It is just a playback app. It does still stream from your OneDrive. Let's reiterate, it does still stream music that you have stored in a music folder on Microsoft OneDrive. That is the only thing that even looks like a music service inside of Groove Music now. Other than that, it's just an app that plays back your local music. So I'm not really sure what else to say about that we didn't already say when this announcement came out. So how about we just move on to the other bad news for audio news in the Microsoft space.
And that is that iTunes was supposed to be available in 2017 for users of Windows 10S. That would mean that iTunes would need to be available as an app in the Microsoft Store. And Microsoft announced earlier this year that that would be happening. And it has not happened yet. That has been delayed. We don't have a new date yet, but both parties say that they are still working on this and it is still in the plans. Now, why is this important? Because believe it or not, the two most run apps on Windows PCs are Chrome and iTunes. And yep. still, neither of them are available for Windows 10 S users.
Yeah, and I kind of don't expect Chrome to ever be available in the Windows, sorry, the Microsoft Store. Even I get confused by the constant name changes for Microsoft. But yeah, I didn't remember that iTunes was supposed to be out this year, but it does kind of make sense considering there are Windows 10 S laptops available right now. So like the Surface laptop. So yeah, that's a little disappointing. Don't really know who's to blame there. And maybe blame is a harsh word, but hopefully for all of you who are looking to get access to iTunes in Windows 10 S, hopefully you'll get it soon in the new year.
I find it ironic that, you know, we just talked about a music app that a lot of people liked, but in fact, one of the biggest apps at all on the platform is a music app that nobody likes, but everybody uses.
Right. It's the world we live in. All right. So we're going to move on to gaming news. And for people like Richard, who kind of snooze during the gaming section, rejoice, because this is going to be the shortest segment of the night. Because there's really not much to talk about here. The big, huge winter sale is now over. There's no new games really to talk about. There's no new hardware. There's no real news here. So just to catch you up on deals, well, there's new deals with gold, but it's terrible because we just finished the giant winter sale. So there's nothing worth talking about in deals with gold. But because it's a new month, we do have new games with gold. These are the free titles that you get just for being an Xbox Live Gold subscriber. The Hangover title, of course, from the second half of last month up through the first half of this month is Back to the Future, the game that's on Xbox One. And then the new title for all month long is The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing 3. I believe this is brand new, if I read that correctly. This game kind of looks like a Diablo style game, but I've never played any of these Van Helsing games, so I don't really know for sure. And the second half of January through February 15th, you'll get Zombie for free. That's Zombi, because it's cool zombies. I don't know. So it's another zombie shooter game. On the 360 side for the first half of January, we get Tomb Raider Underworld. And the second half of the month, we get Army of Two. I never played Army of Two. This is a first-person shooter. And it's, as you might imagine, geared at co-op play. I love co-op games, especially co-op shooters. And I had always heard that Army of Two was a good one. So when this hits on January 16th, I'm going to get this one and I'm probably going to play it. Because as a reminder, all of these 360 games that are free through Games with Gold are backwards compatible and can be played on an Xbox One. Richard, do you want to play with me? Yep, for some Army of Two?
He didn't know. Nope.
Yeah.
Thank you, though.
You don't want to carry me through it. You don't want to embarrass me.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would do. That's why I don't want to play with you.
I get it. You're just a really nice guy like that.
Yep. All right. Well, that is it for news in this episode. So let's move on to what's been going on in our entertainment centers. We had 2 weeks. We had the holidays. You had time off. So I think you actually watched some television. I'm excited to hear about that. And I got a gift. And my gift was, conveniently enough, since I picked it out based on Rob H's suggestions, the KEF, the KEF front channel soundbar. It is a 3.0 independent channel soundbar that takes the three banana plug inputs for my speakers and basically presents all of those in one device under the screen. So I'm pretty excited about this. I haven't had a chance to set it up yet. It's been a pretty busy holiday, but I'll be doing that when I get back from CES. And once I do that, I'll be very, very happy to get rid of approximately, you know, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 cubic feet of speakers that are out in the middle of the room and causing all kinds of, let's call it, design strife. So we'll be getting rid of those, and hopefully it'll all sound as good.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, you know, with Rob H's recommendations, I'm sure it's a darn good sounding soundbar.
Yeah, I have little concern there. So the other thing that I toyed with this weekend was going out into my media center and poking around and seeing if I really wanted to do anything to restore the tuner service on that has not worked properly for, wow, I want to say a year now, Josh.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, basically, since DVR service has been available in beta to Plex users, I've been using Plex as my primary DVR. And so I haven't bothered trying to get my tuners to work again on my media center. Now, I would still go out to it occasionally, and primarily I've been using it for testing different things, but I haven't been using it on a regular basis. And I came to a kind of sad conclusion this weekend. I think I'm done with Media Center.
What?
I know!
Richard, that means that neither of us are using Windows Media Center anymore.
I know. I know. It's a sad day. And
it is kind of.
I didn't expect this to come, and honestly, it wouldn't have if Plex hadn't filled the gap as well, not as reliably as we've often reported, but as well as it has over this past year, being able to use the tuners that I already own and being able to, you know, present that information as well as live TV, which, you know, I don't necessarily need, but it's nice to have there as well. Yeah, I'm bummed, but I think I'm done.
So GP3 in the chat is saying that he misses Media Center. He's apparently done with it too. I was just thinking the other day that there are definitely things that I do miss about Media Center. I miss that user interface.
Oh yeah.
Do you miss it, Richard?
Oh, I do. I mean, it is so, so simple. It's much more complicated to use the interface to get to TV or streaming or libraries, either in Plex or in the different streaming boxes that I have balanced with all of the other streaming services that are available. It's a much more complicated world now, and I don't think it's as clean as what Microsoft had envisioned, but I don't think we're going to get anything as clean and as seamless as what Microsoft envisioned. And that's kind of sad, but I don't see anything filling that gap as well as they had. You know, TiVo has always been a contender and always in my household. TiVo never went away while I was using Media Center or anything else. That was kind of like the household DVR because it's so dead simple.
Right.
But Media Center was mine and I wasn't letting go. And sadly, I'm letting go now.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like we should play Taps or something like that.
All right. Now, I have been watching a bunch of content over the past 2 weeks. Not as much as I normally would because we had guests and we had holidays and, you know, I just took a little bit of a break. But I did catch up on Shameless, caught up on Arrow and The Flash. Both of them had their mid-season finales a couple weeks before the holidays. I'm now in Game of Thrones season 2 and watching that. I'll talk about that a little bit later. And still watching a lot of YouTube, although not as much as I was before the holidays. I finally watched Serenity, the movie that concludes the series that I had been watching, Firefly, as a part of following along with the guys on Cord Cutters, or Cord Killers, rather. And I forgot how much I liked that movie. It's a really good movie. It's a shame they didn't make more. I understand why they didn't, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Serenity. I thought that while Firefly didn't really get a proper ending, Serenity did a pretty decent job of giving it that ending.
Yeah, I think it did. I think it did. So I was happy about that. What was funny about that is I own Serenity. I think I mentioned this before. Serenity was the first movie I ever bought on HD DVD. And I converted the content, but I don't know how many of y'all know about the concept of telesigning, but basically, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, but basically if you rip content and it's not, your frames don't match properly based on how your ripping algorithm is designed to work, you end up with jerky output. And my audio, or my output was jerky and kind of unwatchable, and the audio was screwed up. And what do I expect? Years after HD DVD died, I tried to rip mine and just assumed it would all work fine, but it didn't. So I ended up actually renting this on, I think it was probably Apple TV. So that was kind of frustrating. I also watched Inferno, which was a gift from you. Thank you very much. That was a gift on Ultra HD Blu-ray, and we watched that and enjoyed that over the holiday week. And finally, I watched the new Netflix Will Smith piece, Bright, and I really, really liked that movie. And I'm hoping that they might be considering making a series out of it. I don't know that they have any reason to be doing that, but they created a very interesting world that I think could be very readily explored in depth in another series of episodes or maybe even movies.
Yeah, Alan is saying in the chat that he liked it as well, but the critics apparently didn't. And I thought that that's what I had heard too, was that a lot of people didn't like this.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I thought it was a clever premise. I don't want to get into it because I don't want to spoil it. When you first figure out what's going on, you're like, wait, what? And it's kind of cool. And it's such a discord that it's interesting to watch how they tell the story. And it was pretty cool. I enjoyed it. I also started watching Planet Earth 2. I bought the discs for this when I first got the, I think when I first got the 1S, but I never actually watched them. I just put them in and looked at a couple scenes and marveled at them, but I never sat down to watch them. So we started watching them, and wow, this Planet Earth 2 is a reference disc series for Ultra HD. It is just stunningly beautiful. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. It's also now available on Netflix in 4K, but not, unfortunately, in HDR on Netflix. So if you have the opportunity to see them on Ultra HD, I would recommend the discs.
Oh, I didn't realize that it wasn't in HDR on Netflix.
Yeah.
I turned it on briefly just while I was doing stuff around the house, and it looked really nice. I mean, yeah, I guess it wasn't in HDR, but I didn't really watch it for long because I walked out of the room to go do some other things and came back in, and Jen had turned it off because apparently Gia, who's only 4, walked into the room while an animal was attacking another animal.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of scared her, so we turned that off.
But yeah, there's a lot of that.
Those Planet Earth movies are incredibly amazing to look at.
They are, the pictures in this are just stunning. I mean, the movies are beautiful in their cinematography and you know, the way they're produced, but the picture quality of that, I've just never seen anything like this. Such incredible depth. It's absolutely phenomenal. And then finally, I got back to Black Mirror. I watched the first series, I think it was 2 years ago now, and I never continued on with it, primarily because it's not that often that I just want to watch like a one-off 1 hour thing. And that's pretty much what Black Mirror is. Every episode is its own story and they're all about an hour long. And if I'm going to do that, it would usually be on a plane. And generally, these videos are, or these stories are not really the kind of thing that I would want to watch on a plane, because they are, nope. I would say, R-rated, and that's being generous. So right. I've actually had the experience where I started watching something and just fast forwarded and kept fast forwarding. And I'm like, no, I can't watch this. I can't do this. It's like,
yeah,
it's not appropriate content. If anyone's looking over my shoulder, very disturbing stuff, but very interesting stories. So I'm glad that I'm back on that. And hopefully I'll continue to go through that. And the reason that I started watching that again is because season four, the second half of season four, if you will, is out now. So I wanted to try and catch up. So that's it for me. How about you?
Well, so I did have a lot of time off, but we were pretty busy for a lot of that. We were at the in-laws for a few days around Christmas and stuff, and then we had guests over for a few days. So not a ton, but I did, you know, by Saturday, I was exhausted. It was a lazy day around our house on Saturday. It was wonderful. And played a lot of video games. And watched a couple of episodes of Mr. Robot. So I think I am 5 episodes into the latest season of Mr. Robot. Mm. And yep, it's still great. Like, I don't really know what to say that isn't going to be spoilery, so I won't. But I'm still loving it. I had an interesting conversation today with a friend, and she said she just couldn't really, like, she stopped watching it into season two at some point, and she said that she just couldn't deal with continuing to watch Elliot and his depression and all of that. And I was like, but wait a second, you love Homeland, and frankly I find Homeland way more depressing than Mr. Robot. So I don't know, and kind of an interesting take there, but I'm still loving Mr. Robot. In terms of video games, I also had a Christmas present to play with. I got Project Cars 2. Holy crap, does that look good on an Xbox One X? It looks real good. It's really pretty. This is not a game for people who are looking for simple arcade racers. It is not that at all. It is a difficult and challenging racing simulation. I'm struggling with it because I haven't played a lot of sim racers in a while. And because I'm playing it on Xbox, I don't have my wheel. Now, if you played Project Cars, the first one, and you hated the controls with a controller, it is way better in Project Cars 2, but it's still tough because it's pretty realistic. There's not nearly as many assist going on as in games like Forza and stuff like that. So, but it's cool and it looks beautiful. And then the other thing, when I did have some friends over, well, I purchased for one of those friends a SNES Classic. And so we busted that out and we were playing some old Super Nintendo games. And that is a fun little device. Played a bunch of Street Fighter, played some Contra 3, played some Super Mario World. The SNES Classic is a really fun little device. It's great that it has the actual SNES controllers. It was a ton of fun. We played way more Street Fighter 2 than we probably should have, but it was so much fun. And then just lots and lots and lots of NHL whenever I had free time. So that was basically my break. So that does it for my entertainment center. Let's get into a couple of announcements. Again, we've already mentioned this a little bit, but next week is CES, the huge Consumer Electronics Show. It's not called the Consumer Electronics Show, but that's what it is. So we will be there all next week. We will not have a live podcast for Entertainment 2.0, but we will be recording an episode next week. I'm just not exactly sure when we're going to put it out. So look for that in your feeds. And of course, be constantly refreshing the digitalmediazone.com to follow all of our coverage of all of the news that you really care about from CES.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to that. You know, I'm at that part anxiety, part excitement stage where
Yep.
I'm not quite ready yet, but I'm really looking forward to everything. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We always have an exhausting but energizing and fun time there. And certainly there's so much going on in the entertainment and connected space right now. I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going to be on shelves. All right. Well, I have two quick announcements as well. So I have been teasing for the longest time now that I am participating in a podcast talking about Game of Thrones. And in fact, that show is now available in terms of our sneak episode, where we tease what the show is about and introduce the hosts and talk a little bit about what we'll be doing. Episode 0 of Let's Talk About Thrones is now available in iTunes and other podcatchers. We'll have a link in the show notes, and my co-hosts Anthony Lemos and Jenny Josephson are all on this initial episode, and we have a really good time kind of explaining how we're going to approach things. The first episode will be coming out shortly as well, may even be out by the time that this episode of Entertainment 2.0 hits.
Nice. Congratulations on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. It's been a lot of fun and something very different for me. So if you're into trying to watch that for the first time, or you're rewatching it, or just curious what other people have to say about it, I will suggest you give it a lesson. Like everything that I do over at Ritual Misery, this show is not safe for work. So expect that it is going to have an explicit tag on it. Additionally, speaking of the explicit tag, I was on last week's episode of the Ritual Misery podcast, their end of year wrap up. I don't think is out yet. It'll probably be out next couple days again, maybe even by the time that this Entertainment 2.0 episode hits. And we ran through some of the highlights and lowlights of 2017. Wow. I usually have trouble remembering what the current year is on January 2nd. This year, I'm mixing that up. And so we'll have a link to that show as well, assuming that it is available at the time that we publish this. So check those out if you have a chance. And as always, not safe for work.
Cool. All right. Well, if you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. And we've got some other podcasts that we do here at the DMZ. I've got a new episode of Story Players out now, where we got to play the conclusion, the finale of Life is Strange Before the Storm. That just hit last week, so go and check that out if you have been playing Life is Strange Before the Storm. Richard, what is going on with your other show, Home On?
So after screwing up the feed, I managed to get the technology.fm fireside chat out. My apologies to those of you who listen to Home On, but I somehow managed to get last year's fireside chat published again instead of the current year's episode. So I eventually did fix that. If you have two episodes in your feed because you are not up to date, just delete the first one, and the one that follows is the one that is corrected, even though for some reason they now both say fixed. It's the final one. It's the last one that's out there that is, in fact, fixed. Again, my apologies. It was a fun show, and as always, the DMZ edit has just a lot of the the usual stuff taken out. The stammers, the ums, the time-consuming stuff that isn't necessary, and we get an hour and 15 minutes down to an hour. So, you know, it's an economical way of listening to the same thing that you could have caught on the other channels where that occurred. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is that coming up, and I'm already working on editing this, I recorded an episode with CNET's Megan Woolerton from the CNET Smart Home. She will be at CES, and We're hoping to catch up with her and Rich and Rye and the other CNET folks while we're out there. But that episode will hit before CES starts.
Very cool. Looking forward to it. All right. Well, we also do this show, Entertainment 2.0, live. We use Mixer to do that. So you get video and audio and a chat room. It's a lot of fun for us and for you. I think that is normally Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It won't be next week, but following CES, we should be back to our normal schedule. But your best bet, just follow us on Twitter because we always tweet as to when we will be recording this show live. So check that out. It is a lot of fun. But that is going to do it for episode 434, the first episode of 2018. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.